time the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
A very special show-and-tell edition of Abandoned Manitoba today. Gordon Goldsborough from the Manitoba Historical Society joins us. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce.
You brought stuff in. You'll show me and I'll tell the listeners what we're talking about here.
Right.
Ephemera.
Right. You know, and you've heard that expression, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Yeah.
Right? Well, that is literally true of today's topic. I collect ephemera, which are items that were never intended to survive very long. You know, things like junk mail.
Uh-huh.
So today I'm going to share a few treasures in my collection of historical trash.
Can't wait. You got a bag of stuff and,
oh, yeah,
and a binder and a very large piece here we'll talk about. Where do we start?
Okay, well, we'll start here.
A hotel room key.
It is indeed. And in fact, it's a skeleton key of the kind we haven't used in a long, long time. And it's at least 90 years old because attached to the key is a metal tag.
Yes.
And it's actually of a kind that was probably going to be familiar to listeners of a certain age, because you probably remember a time when you checked into a hotel, the key tag would say, if you forgot to take the, you know, return the key to the front desk when you left, just drop it in any mailbox and they'll send it back to us.
Right.
Well, that's what this key tag says. And it also gives the name of the hotel, which is?
Strathcona Hotel.
Right.
Room 98.
Room 98. And now, does that resonate at all, Bruce? Do you know where the Strathcona was?
On Strathcona?
Nope.
Street? No? Okay, nope. Where was it?
It was on Main Street, pretty much where the Manitoba Museum is located today. So
okay.
In other words, Strathcona Hotel is now gone. It was built in 1905, and it was renamed the Cornwall Hotel in 1932. And that's why we know that this key must be from the period from either 1905 up to 1932, because that's the only period when it was called the Strathcona Hotel. It was demolished in 1967 to make way for the museum. And so this key, which, you know, it may be the only surviving remnant of that hotel.
Where did you find it?
It was given to me by someone who attended one of my presentations, somebody living in Verdun.
I like that it's metal, mm-hmm, and it says, return by mail postage, 3 cents.
Yeah. Well, the fact that you could even send something for 3 cents
in the mail
tells you it was a long time ago.
Very interesting. Okay, what's next?
Well, we have a map of Manitoba, and it shows the main highways and municipal roads. It was issued by the provincial government in 1929.
Wow.
Now, our first road map of Manitoba that goes back to 1913 wasn't really a map as we think of it today. It was really just sort of turn-by-turn instructions on how to drive between two points across what could often be an unmarked prairie. In 1924, the Manitoba Motor League produced a visual map of the province, complete with marked, numbered highways. 2 years later, a similar map was published by the Winnipeg Tourism and Convention Bureau. But and finally, in 1928, the Manitoba Good Roads Board, that was a part of the Department of Public Works, produced a much better map that would literally set the tone for road maps for the next several decades. My map, which is from 1929, in other words, the second year that the provincial government was producing maps, distinguishes roads that are graveled, graded, and unimproved. Three kinds of roads. And if you look carefully, they actually have a symbol for paved roads, but you have to look really carefully because
there aren't many.
There aren't. There just weren't the highways we think of today. You know, so that really does demonstrate just how much our roads have changed. And what's interesting is the Manitoba government has digitized a large collection of these early maps. And from looking at successive ones year after year, you can get a really interesting insight into the expansion of our highway network from the 1920s onward.
Yeah, the legend shows that the paved roads are sort of a cross-hatched kind of design here. And there's one leading west from Winnipeg, not very far out of the city perimeter, and just south of Winnipeg, and that's it.
Yep, everything else was the best you could hope for was gravel, and more often it wasn't even that. It was just graded or sometimes what they called unimproved, which would just be a dirt track across the prairie.
And this is a very well-appointed map and still in very, very good shape. Almost like it's printed now, except it looks like a sort of a vintage theme.
Yep.
But it's actual 1929.
It is original.
Very impressive. And smells like it's been in a cardboard box for quite some time.
Plastic sleeve keeps keeps it preserved.
There you go.
Yeah.
Excellent. Next.
Well, we have literal proof about that expression of trash and treasure. In 2022, when Canada's oldest grain elevator, which at that time was in the village of Elva in southwestern Manitoba, it was being dismantled. And the workers discovered trash that had been left behind in crevices in the building. Huh. Among them, we have a Coca-Cola bottle cap.
Oh, very nice. The old type with a cork on the inside.
Yep. We have empty cartons of Players and Sweet Caporal cigarettes.
Oh, my mom used to smoke Players. I remember this.
Yep. Wrappers for O. Henry, Eat More, and Cadbury Macaroon candy bars.
My mom quit smoking in 1973, by the way. Look at this. The old style O. Henry wrapper.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one. Oh, Eat More. Who doesn't love an Eat More? Oh, this is really old.
Well, that's it. You know, so what do we know about them? Well, the fellow who sent them to me, who was the fellow who was leading the dismantling, well, he thought I would enjoy them. And I do because, well, I want to know, for example, you know, how did they get where they are? And I'm pretty sure they weren't there when the elevator was being built, because that would be 1897.
No.
And that's before some of these were actually available as brands. The elevator was actually renovated in 1950. And it's conceivable to me that's perhaps when these candy bars and Coke bottles and cigarette packs were dumped there. But, you know, it's an interesting insight to just daily lives, you know, the kind of things that people would use on a daily basis.
Yeah, the O. Henry looks like it might be 70s-ish, but the Eat More and the Cadbury's Macaroon, I mean, the fact that it says 5 cents on it, it suggests quite older than that. This one is the Launay Company from Montreal, and this one says Cadbury Montreal as well. Montreal, big chocolate hub, I guess, back in the day.
Sure thing.
Excellent. Okay, what's in that binder?
Well, have a look.
Okay. Oh, here's your bottle cap. Let's see here. Oh, business cards.
Yeah, it's my personal collection of business cards.
Right.
You know, as long as I can remember, whenever someone gave me their business card, you know, of course, that it was used as a way of providing contact information, I added it to a binder. And originally, my intent was to make it easier to find specific people when I wanted to contact them. What was his name now? What was his phone number?
Right.
I'll find his business card. Well, of course, today, you know, now we've got things like email programs and cell phones that makes it ridiculously easy to find contact information. So you just start typing a person's name in an email and it fills in the rest, or you search their name in your contacts on your phone. So you don't need business cards anymore. But, you know, as my binder became obsolete, I realized it still provided an interesting insight to the people, to the organizations, the businesses with whom I had connections through the years. So I've continued adding new cards to it, and my collection now numbers in the hundreds, dating back to around the 1990s. And if I look at it today, I see cards from people who are no longer living. I see cards for businesses and organizations that no longer exist. I see weird and funny cards and a whole lot more. So, you know, whether anyone but me sees this card collection as anything but mildly interesting garbage remains to be seen. But, you know, I think it certainly qualifies as ephemera.
Well, I'm just going to pick two out that I've looked at here. One is from the Winnipeg Police Museum, Staff Sergeant Jack Templeman.
Yes, the late Jack Templeman, a wonderful guy. It's a fountain of knowledge about policing in Manitoba and its history. Unfortunately, he passed a few years ago. So there's an example.
And this, I guess, could be a musical duo, a photo of two musicians. It says the Bush Tits.
Yeah, frankly, I have no idea how I would have got that card. I assume it's named after a bird, but I don't know. But
they named their musical duo after a bird, thebushtits.com.
Well, another one of the musical groups you'll see a card in there for is a group called Big Chunk of Rock, which was my brother-in-law. There we go.
BigChunkOrock.com.
Yeah, that's right. He no longer performs under that name, but I think it's cool that I have one of his old business cards.
Yeah, very cool. All right, now over to this gigantic book that you've laid in front of me.
Yes. For the sake of listeners who can't see it, this is a large hardcover book. It measures about 21 inches tall, 14 inches wide, about 2 inches thick. And if you turn to the very first page, Bruce, what do you see?
Daily Free Press, Winnipeg, Wednesday, October 6th, 1875.
Yes. This is a bound volume of about 9 months. Of the, well, it was called the Manitoba Free Press at the time. It's, of course, today's Winnipeg Free Press. And basically, each day when they printed the paper, they'd put one aside. It would be a stack of them. And eventually, when the stack got high enough, they took it and got it bound into a book. So this is quite literally 150-year-old paper. You know, it's literally day by day. If you were reading the paper back in 1875, this is what you would read.
So you're saying after a printing run of the daily paper, they'd save one to bind in a book?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, so this is 4 pages, very small print. something jumps out at me here. The White Saloon on Main Street, Alex McIntyre, proprietor. Come get your wine and liquor.
And, you know, and it's full of old advertising. Yeah. You know, it has the arrival dates of the steamboats on the Red River. I mean, it's just literally a slice of life from 1875. And, you know, that's really what I think. Well, I would argue that this is like a paper time machine.
For sure.
You can find out all sorts of details of things that are nowhere else but in the daily newspaper. And of course, I could do the same thing with the digitized newspapers. There are collections of them online, but it's just not the same. There's sort of a tactile sense as you flip those pages and think, who else has flipped the same pages before me over those 150 years? And in a very real way, the book allows me to feel like I'm living, you know, maybe briefly in Manitoba's past in a way that nothing else can do for me.
And so much history in here, too, of, well, there's stories about people, but the advertisements kind of jump out at me. A lot of ads for wood stoves, and something here says City Bakery, First Street, Winnipeg.
Yep. But back when we had a First Street.
I wonder where that would have been.
Yeah. But yeah, there's hardware stores and grocery stores and clothing stores and furniture stores. A lot of them have ads. And so if you want to know what kind of businesses operated in the early days of Manitoba, there's a way to find out.
So how'd you get your hands on this?
Well, let's just say it resulted from dumpster diving.
I wouldn't put it past you.
I've got a whole collection of them. I forget how many volumes. It's like 60 or so for different years, different papers. But I just love them. And, you know, it's just wonderful just flipping through them periodically just to get a taste of what it was like to live back then.
Very interesting. Okay, so let's sum it up then. Why do you collect ephemera?
Well, I think that each piece gives me a unique glimpse into things like the social norms, the economic conditions, the cultural trends of its time. What makes ephemeral objects especially powerful is that they reflect the voices and visuals of everyday life, not just the official record, you know, that might be preserved in books. Think of the likes of that Elva grain elevator trash. Mm-hmm. We know the brands of cigarettes that were being smoked. We know what kind of candy bars were popular. Essentially, ephemera fills in the gaps left by formal histories, such as books. So my collection represents, I think, a time capsule of the 19th and 20th centuries.
Thanks for lugging all this stuff in for us.
You betcha.
Today. So what's up for next week?
Well, I think most of our listeners will agree that the nature of journalism has changed fundamentally.
Oh, you think?
From what it was a generation ago. Old school reporters, such as the late Lillian Gibbons. Did you ever know Lillian Gibbons,
no.
Bruce?
No.
Oh, well, we'll talk about her next week.
Okay.
She wrote a chatty weekly column in the Winnipeg Tribune from 1935 to the early 1960s. In other words, like over 25 years. And that kind of thing simply doesn't exist anymore. So next week, we're going to consider Ms. Gibbons' contribution to our appreciation of Manitoba's architectural history, much of which is unfortunately gone today.
Okay, we'll look forward to that. Thanks, Gordon.
You're quite welcome. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.